I'm Katie Kempner, and welcome to Perspectives, which is a series of inspiring conversations with remarkable working women. And I most certainly have a remarkable guest today, my friend Trieger Strasberg, the founder of Humble Design. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
I'm really excited to have you here. And it's so wonderful that we reconnected because I originally knew you many years ago through your husband.
It is a weird, wild world, especially in advertising. It's amazing how many people come back into your circle, but really happy that we connected again because, you know, there's just some people that you connect with and have a connection in like a deeper way. And I just always felt very connected to what you were doing. Plus, you're a badass woman in business. So always following you on social media is fun.
Thank you. Well, that is very nice. And you are certainly a badass woman. And I would love to start for people that don't know, just to hear a little bit about your career journey up until founding Humble Design.
Okay. Let's see. So I was going to be an artist. I graduated from School of Visual Arts. I was going to be a fine artist. And then I transferred into graphic design and advertising, realizing that I was a terrible fine artist. Which is this level of self-awareness that I hope every one of your listeners have. They're just bad at something, be like, I'm bad at that. Okay, so I went into graphic design and advertising, and I got engaged to my husband. I had a job lined up in graphic design that I completely ghosted in New York to move down to Miami to be with my husband. I worked at Crispin Porter Bogusky in their studio. Does anybody know what the studio is? Because it is a level of hell that I feel very badly for anybody working in the studio, but that's where I started. And then after working at Crispin, which was an incredible experience, actually, as they grew and just made this like incredible trajectory of growth, I realized that very soon on, my husband was going to be my boss at some point because he worked there too. And I was like, ooh, I don't know a lot about marriage, but like, I don't know if that's a good idea. I was probably 24 years old at that point. And I was like, I just have a feeling that that's going to be icky. Looking back, it probably would have been fine. Anyway, doesn't matter. I moved to a graphic design studio to get out of that situation, worked there for a while. And then September 11th happened. And anybody in the world of advertising and marketing knows that like that was probably the death of hundreds of small shops, including the one that I was working at. So really tragic event for the United States. And then beyond that, just decimated the industry. So I ended up starting a little clothing company, yada, 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 through that. And I ended up starting a, I don't know if anybody knows, Bye Bye Lines, which is a camel toe reduction company, blah, 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 blah. Ended up on Howard Stern, blah, 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 blah. Please don't Google it. And then I went to... Detroit to my husband got a job from Miami in Detroit where my kids were little. So I had two little kids, 2 and 3 years old. We moved to Detroit and I'm like, all right, I got to get back in the business. I got to figure out what to do to stay relevant because I had sat across from so many women in my time at the design companies and the shops and women who had been out of the business of advertising or graphic design for 15 years to raise their kids, 18 years, and then be like, okay, I'm ready to go. And they didn't know the programs. They didn't know the latest trends. They didn't know the zeitgeist. They didn't, you know, and so I really wanted to hire them and I wanted to get them back into the industry, but it was really hard to do. So I was like, I'm not going to do that. Even if I have to work for 2 hours a day just to stay relevant. Well, nobody wanted to hire me for 2 hours a day. Can you believe that? Amazing. I put my kids in daycare. I volunteered for 2 to 3 hours a day at a nonprofit doing their graphic design and advertising just so I could stay part of the relevant story of graphic design and advertising and art direction. So that's where I was when my whole life changed.
Perfect segue. It changed because...
Because that nonprofit that I was volunteering at had this incredible woman who ran the front desk. She was all smiles and happiness and loveliness, and she had an incredible sense of style. Her kids were my kids' age. We talked like crap about every single piece of music that was coming out of anywhere except for Detroit. We were just in love with each other's fashion styles and view on life, and we would have coffee. And I really, she was like my first friend in Detroit. And so we would chit chat it up. And about 6 weeks into chit chatting it up, I am doing what I'm doing now, which is doing all the talking. Sorry, Katie.
And it's supposed to happen. It's good.
And I was doing all the talking. And I was like, what's up, Krista? And she's like, oh, I'm so tired. And I was like, well, why are you so tired? She goes, oh, we don't get much sleep in the homeless shelter. It's really loud at night. And I was like, oh, are you volunteering? Like, that's so lovely. Like, what's going on? And she just looked at me like I was an idiot, which I was. And she's like, girl, I'm homeless. Yeah, I just about fell out my chair. You know, have those moments when like you lose sense of gravity and like up is down and down is up and like you have to hold on to something to steady yourself. I literally had like a vasovagal, like weird moment where I had to take a beat to right myself. And then once I realized that she was homeless and that her and her two kids were sleeping in a shelter at night, I heard her story, which is very, I mean, everybody's story is different, but everybody's story is similar in the way that like you have a major catastrophic event, which leads to very small changes. She had a $25 increase in rent. Her landlord took everything that she ever had and put it out on the curb when she couldn't afford the rent increase. She went through a very messy divorce and she's starting over and she just couldn't figure out how to keep the place. And so they were living in a homeless shelter. I cried all the way home. I told my husband what was going on. We knew a couple of people, Chris and I knew a couple of people in common who were trying to sell their home in Detroit in 2008. Everybody, by the way, it was 2008. Everybody knows Detroit in 2008 was like not a great time to sell your home in Detroit. So she worked on a land contract with somebody who knew her and knew that she had this job. Anyway, fast forward, I go to her house. I'm so excited for her that she has this house. And I walk in again, being completely ignorant of life. And I realize that she's sleeping on the floor. They were making a little nest with their winter coats of which room was theirs and where they were going to sleep. And these are like a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old little kid and their mom. And I cried again on the way home. It's a common theme in my story. I cried on the way home again. And I just started pulling stuff out of every closet, everything that I had that I knew we weren't going to use or weren't using a lot of. I asked the kids if there was stuff that they weren't using that they could give away. And I went over to my neighbor's house who I had never met before. And I said, hey, I'm doing this thing. My friend needs stuff. Do you have anything? And she pulled out a coffee table out of her basement. She's like, does she need this? So my friend Anna had a pickup truck and we drove around and started picking up stuff for my friend. And if it was in good condition, it was something that she really liked, I would drop it off. If it wasn't, I would store it in my garage. She wanted a red dining room. So I looked everywhere for a red rug and finally found a red rug. And so we designed her house. It took us 6 weeks, but like everything was the way that you would want your friend's house to look, like dignified and warm and comfortable. And it was the happiest I think I'd ever been at that point, besides the birth of my children and my wedding. Like I was ecstatic. And then I was done. I went back to my volunteer job and everybody went back to their normal, regular scheduled events. And then one day I came home and somebody had left a Natutzi couch on my front lawn in Birmingham, Michigan. It was a sectional. And I don't know how they got it over my little white picket fence, which I am telling you the truth, I had a little white picket fence. And then I drove into my garage thinking, well, that's odd. And there was a crib parked in my spot in my garage. So I was like, okay, what is going on? I had been dubbed the furniture lady in my community after 6 weeks of doing this. And people thought that I was going to bring this stuff down to somebody who needed it. When in fact, like I was done, my project was over. So I called around and I said, hey, I have this stuff coming in. I have a bunch of stuff. My garage is filling up. Who donated the stuff directly to families in need? Because that was the spirit which was given to me. Don't resell it. They could have given it to Goodwill. Don't resell it, but give it to somebody who needs it. And it didn't exist. I called 9 shelters to ask which program I should be donating to. And all 9 shelters said that program doesn't exist. In fact, what they do is they crowdfund to get a family that they like a air mattress. That's the extent of what they do. And I was stunned that that didn't exist in the world of nonprofit. I will say at this point, I barely even knew what a nonprofit was. So starting a nonprofit was not in my purview. I'll just say that. I didn't think at any time.
So how did it go from that, where you were like, wait a second, to what it is today? Because, I mean, maybe we can jump so you can say what it is today and then how you got there.
Yada, yada, over the last 15 years, and we have furnished homes for over 10,800 individuals in 5 states. We furnish anywhere between 11 to 13 homes a week, and we have 4 warehouses across the country that are jam-packed, anywhere between 20,000 to 60,000 square feet of furniture and hundreds of volunteers and about 60 employees. I mean, yada, yada.
I mean, that is truly amazing. Truly amazing.
You know what's I find amazing about it is that every house that we do, in fact, the 11 houses we're going to do this week are done the exact same way as I did my very first house with Krista, which is like, we are furnishing for a friend. Like, what do you want? What do you see in your house? I'm not going to put that in your house because it's not something you want. Like, every house is done, which is weird that we haven't changed our process the exact same way.
So let's talk a little bit then about what you've learned about leadership. You know, you took this incredible idea and grew it to where it is today. And it sounds to me, correct me if I'm wrong, that you were, you know, growing and figuring out as you went along. But when you have 60 people, even earlier on, when you had 10 or 20 people, they had to understand the vision, not just believe in the organization, understand the vision. What are some leadership, maybe let's say lessons, that you could please share with us about leading as you're growing?
We started this conversation with me saying I'm a really bad fine artist. And I want to go back to that, because admitting that you don't know everything or that you're not good at something or somebody might be better at something than you are is for me was really important. I didn't know anything about nonprofit. I didn't know anything about throwing events or fundraising. Again, graphic designer over here, like, I'm going to make you a pretty flyer. So I just went out and just like laid myself bare and just said, hey, I need your help, congressperson, senator, community leader, mayor. Literally, I would just like naively walk into these people's offices and say, I don't know what I'm doing, but my heart is good. My intentions are good. Can you help me? I never got a no. I got like, some people were like, well, I can't do all of that, but here's what I can do. I never got a no, because I wasn't trying to pretend that I knew what I was doing and try to instill confidence in my leadership skills. I was literally hired women. My first 10 hires were women who had young children who could only work a certain amount during the day and had to have lots of flexibility. And I said to them, like, listen, I get that you need this flexibility, but I also get that you're really good at being efficient in doing this. So I'm not going to bother you. I'm going to say, you know what you're doing. I was never so ignorant into the fact where I let somebody take over a whole section of the company without knowing what was going on. I think that's a big mistake, but I knew enough to let them just manage their own skill sets. Right. Mm-hmm. So, I would say number one, ask for help. Have some humility. Don't try and pretend that you know what you're doing. A lot of entrepreneurs I meet with now are like trying to like pitch to me that like they know the whole world. I'm like, no, you don't. No, you don't. But that's okay. You're not supposed to. But ask for help in the right places. Also, I know that my role is to bring people along. My gift is getting people excited about the mission. My gift is to get people really to feel deeply about the same things that I really feel deeply about, and explain to them why it's important. So I have to keep doing that and remind people like why they're there and what the mission is. My skill set is not the management and operation in the background. At first, entrepreneurs have to be both, but eventually you get to understand that if you are the leadership role where you get to sell the company or sell yourself, then that's where you should focus in on. And then I just absolutely adore the people that we've put in leadership roles to do the operation. I know that's not where I shine. I guess I made a lot of mistakes. I made a lot of mistakes. Rob and I, my husband and I, were talking about this last night in anticipation of this podcast. What would I have changed? And I think that at the beginning of my role in hiring and leading people, I wanted to be around people that I really liked. and it didn't really matter what their skill set was. I just wanted to go into work every morning and be like super jazzed to be there. And then I realized like, oh shoot, some people are not competent to hold these positions. And I really need to feel like I'm not the only one in this company doing all the work. So then I started hiring just people who are really competent in that field. And then I hated going to work. And I was like, oh shoot. So now what I realized is competence is awesome. Yes. And if the highly specified role, but make sure that you're hiring people that you also like to be around and then who hold the same value sets as you, even if they're not a perfect fit for that job. I would say that if they're smart and they're competent, they can learn up, unless it's, again, highly specified, but make sure that you still want to go into work every day. I absolutely adore, we have 60 employees and like I walk in and it is just a love fest. I love the culture so much. And that's not a mistake because I messed that up a couple of times.
I think that's terrific advice. So in the vein of advice, to say that we're living in unprecedented times is almost a ridiculous statement. And, you know, for many different reasons, many people feel like things are out of control and they want to make a difference. Some people who are listening and hearing your story might say to themselves, that's amazing what Trigger's done, but I can't do something like that. I don't have the resources. I don't have the time. I can't do it. Maybe they have had their moment like you had with your friend Chris, and maybe they haven't. But for whatever reason, they want to do something, but they can't start like that. Can you share with us some ideas on how someone can become impactful in their own way?
Well, I think that it's dangerous for us to, we idolize, we have this idea in our head that go big or go home and change the world, think globally, act locally. We idolize people who have made it, who have done it. And I have by no means made it or done it, but I have built a very large organization, which is garnering attention, which is what you look at now. And it's daunting, but I wish that you could have met me on day one where I was like, I don't know, I'm just going to pull some towels out of my laundry room, you know, because that's really what happened. It's a tiny bite. So I have a lot of women, including women in my own family and women in my own circle, come to me right now and say, like, I feel helpless. I'm curled up in my bed. I don't know what to do. I feel like everything I do is going to be too small and I don't have the gas in my tank to do anything big. And there is no big things. That's the end of the story. There is no big things. It doesn't exist. The only thing that exists is small things that compound to make big. So my advice to everyone is you have in your head that one small thing that you keep forgetting or putting off doing, whether it's going to check on your neighbor, whether it's calling that person who you've been meaning to call and check in on, or bringing food down to your fire station, or going to that little nonprofit on the corner that you drive by every day and you see those volunteers and you're like, what are they doing? You have one little thing that is sitting in your to-do shelf in your brain that you haven't done. And I would just say, try not to overwhelm yourself with the amount of crap that needs to be fixed in the world right now. And try to just focus on that one small thing that you can do today that when you go home later on at night, you're like, all right, well, I did something. I did one thing today. Imagine that compounded to every person in this country. If every person in this country did that one small thing, it would make more of a difference than anything else that any politician, any lawmaker could do for change in this country. And we all have to dedicate ourselves to small things.
I think that's wonderful. And sometimes it's just even listening or noticing. You know, I was in New York this week for work and I was walking down the street and this man who did not appear to be homeless, but definitely appeared like maybe he was having a bit of a rough time. I was walking by like a food cart and he was asking people if they would buy him food, not even for money, just if they would buy him food. And I walked by and then I think partly inspired by doing that webinar recently with you and Sonia Jackson Miles. And I went back and I said, what would you like? And we went over and he got a chicken and rice. And I said, would you like anything else? And he said, oh, I'll take a hot dog. And I said, well, would you like something to drink with that? And he said, I'd like a Snapple. And so, you know, the guy made it and handed over to the man. And he said, you know, I'm not homeless. I'm just having a very hard time. And thank you for this. So, and I walked away and first of all, he got to eat. It was a very, very tiny little thing, but I felt good about it that I had done some, you know, done a tiny little thing where at least somebody wasn't hungry for a little while. Now, I would like to say that then that made me realize I need to open like a food cart, which is not the case. But I also think that, you know, maybe if people just open their eyes more and listen a little more, sometimes it's little things that lead to a big thing. And maybe sometimes it's just little things on a regular basis.
That's it. No, you're absolutely right. It is just the little things because you don't even know what he was going through. He tried to give you a little bit of insight, but then you don't know what he was able to do with his day because he wasn't hungry anymore or what goodness he was able to spread or what that did to affect him. I've heard stories about people say, you know, 15 years ago, somebody gave me a fan in the middle of summer. I think is his motivational speaker, his name escapes me right now, but his church gave him a fan in the middle of summer and that affected him so deeply that he built this entire organization. I truly believe I'm a humanist. If anybody wants to Google that, I believe in the power of people and that my job on earth is to relieve suffering in any way I see fit. And if you can figure out how to really love human beings and not judge their journey, then you can just open your eyes. Like everything's an opportunity for kindness. Everything. That small thing that you did is not a small thing. Especially when you say, if everybody did a small thing that day, no, honestly, if we fed our neighbors, if we saw when people were hungry and fed our neighbors, I don't know. I don't know what that would be to the level of hunger in this country. It would just radically change it. Example, I love stories. Driving to work in the morning, going to in Pontiac. My first warehouse was in Pontiac. It's really cold. And I see two kids on the side of the road and they're walking to school with no jackets on in Pontiac, Michigan. And so I drive by them 3 days in a row. On the fourth day, I was like, I got to pull over. I got to do something. So pull over. And I said, hey, I know your mom probably told you not to take ride from strangers, but I'm a lady. I run this nonprofit. Here's my card. Ask your mom if I can drive you to school tomorrow. And I give them my card and I leave them because I think it would be inappropriate for them. I'm in my car and I leave them. And so I get a call from their mom and she says, yeah, I can't afford jackets right now for them. And so I'm sure that the walk to school is hard, but I work at nights at the grocery store, so I can't take them. Okay. So she doesn't get home until later on. So I see them walking the next day and I pick them up and we drive by. We happen to have some coats at Humboldt, grab some coats and take them to school. And I had two huge trays of mac and cheese in the back that we were going to an event that afternoon. And they just inhaled that mac and cheese, like inhaled it. And I was like, okay, yeah, whatever. I can pick up more mac and cheese. But I got to tell you, that ride to school, I have no idea. It was such a small thing for me to do in the mornings. So I see them, I grab them and we go. It's on my way. But I don't know where those kids are. I don't know what happened. I don't know what their day was like with food in their belly. But I just felt good. I just felt good at the end of the day. It felt like a small thing that I could do.
And you really helped them.
I don't know. Listen, when I started Humble, I just love watching people come home and cry at the sight of their house being furnished. I just like that. For me, that's like so great. But like the ripple effect, now we have data behind it, by the way, to your listeners, it isn't just furniture. We have data behind what it actually does. If we had data behind all the little things, like what happens when you buy somebody food in New York, what happens when you drive somebody to school in the morning, if we had data behind that, I think it would be incredible.
Well, what are some of, and you know, you don't have to go into any actual numbers, but just overall, what are some of the ways it changes someone's life when they, with the work that you do, and when they're able to go back to a beautifully furnished home and have a home?
Just fun to do and it gives that sense of relief. UCSD did a data study just to actually quantify what it does for your finances, your mental health, your personal well-being. So what they found was that 98% of our families stay housed, which is unusual because around 50% of families who get into housing after leaving a homeless shelter go back into homelessness. So that's a big number. Also, 86% have increased their pay at work, their financial outlook. I think that there was like 83% have more friends over, have had a sleepover for the first time. Their mental health improves. I mean, the trajectory of every single aspect of their life improves. And, you know, it's not just furniture. It's the fact that it was done with kindness and love and dignity and represents them and reflects them. And I think that what I'm finding after doing this for 15 years, which I can't believe I'm saying out loud, what I found is that the hierarchy of needs is supposed to be shelter, food, water, going all the way down to comfort and self-actualization. When in fact, I truly believe that that's upside down. That the number one thing that people need more than anything is to be seen and to feel like they exist and to feel dignity and empathy. Everything else that comes after that feeds the body. But if our brain and our soul is not fed and seen, the body, it doesn't matter what the body does. The body will not exist without that. So to be seen in a community where you feel unseen and to feel cared and loved about and in a dignified space where you have not had that in the worst year of your life changes everything. And now what I do is I don't talk about furniture all that much. I talk about rebuilding systems from the bottom up, starting with the dignity of human beings and empathy that they have when they're going through a really hard time. One in four Americans will be touched by homelessness in this country in the next 10 years.
Is that
one
right?
In four? Yeah. That's crazy.
That's incredibly frightening. You know, you mentioned how nice it is when you do these homes and people can see them. And now, I mean, you and Rob had this fantastic show where people could, you know, like a television show where people could watch this happen. And now you're a regular on the Kelly Clarkson show doing this with Kelly Clarkson and I think Wayfair. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I am now, I think my official title at Humble is like Unicorn Magic Sprinkle Lady. I love to go and tell people the story of Humble. I'm really excited about it. I still love talking about it. I could talk forever about how much fun it is. But going down to a house is a whole different thing, right? Watching somebody come home and just feel that sense of insane relief that they know where their kids are going to sleep that night, that they're going to be okay. Maybe they don't have to go back to their abuser this time. Maybe it's going to be different. Maybe their community does care about them. I mean, I could do this forever. If you just let me do those days of joy and those reveals, I could do this forever. I will never burn out. So going on to Kelly Clarkson and doing the TV show and all that stuff, I get to share that with everybody else. I get emotional. Like you watch me on the TV show, I cry every friggin' time. I was dehydrated.
You're a crier.
I got literally, I had a bag of fluids by the end of that season because I was so dehydrated from crying at the beginning, meeting the family at the end with happy tears. So I really feel it. And so when I get to do Kelly Clarkson and we get partners like Wayfair, I get to bring them along to this unbelievable mission. And I feel it. Like I really do. It's not a put on. I just really love it. So it is an honor. It's an honor to be able to do those things and just share my passion with others. Also, we get to highlight people's stories. A lot of people look at Humble Design's social media, which I recommend everyone go on and look at our social media sites. And they, you know, they say, oh, you know, are you, is this family okay with telling their story? Because we're telling a lot of very sensitive stories, very sensitive details. And we always get the permission of the family. And we say to them, you do not have, yeah, there's more families that we don't share their story than what we do. But a lot of our families want to share their story because they feel like a success story. And so they say, this is what I went through. So if you're going through this, look, it's going to be okay. Trust in the process, ask for help, it'll be okay. And so all of the stories that we share and the videos that we do are done with explicit permission and with the gratitude of the family. They want it to be done. So when we get to go on Kelly Clarkson and share the stories of these incredible families, all I want to do is talk about their journey and like, so tell me how you got here. Tell me what this is going to be like. What is the first night sleeping in your house going to be like? What's tomorrow going to be like? And it is so, we hear so many sad stories about homelessness and about the numbers and all this stuff. Here is a way to just say, look at the goodness that is happening between people and the goodness that's happening in the world. And I just love those stories. I love sharing them.
So if people do want to follow you on social media and follow Humble Design, where do they go?
So each city has their own social media on Instagram and Facebook. So it's Humble Design National, Humble Design Detroit. We're in Chicago, Cleveland, San Diego. We just shuttered Seattle because warehousing there was so expensive. So we couldn't make it work in Seattle. But all of our social media is there. And then we have one YouTube channel, which is Humble Design. And then also our website, we have volunteer opportunities. We post the latest news. And then if you ever want me to speak at any of your stuff, obviously I like speaking about Humble. I have a website, which is triggerstrasburg.com. And I will talk to a brick wall as long as they have two googly eyes taped to it. I love it. I love talking about this.
You're so delightful. You really are. So just to sort of wrap it up, and you've given us such great advice. Is there one piece of advice that has really helped you through your life and your career that you could please share with us?
Yes, it's less advice than a lesson learned. And I tell the story only because I learned such a huge lesson. So I'm going to try and make it quick. But we never served men when we first started because we were going into people's apartments and we were felt unsafe in a single man's apartment. But we decided that we had enough structure around us that we were going to serve our very first individual male. And we walked into his apartment. He was sitting on the ground, did not turn the TV off when we got up, when we walked in, and he was just giving us one word answers. I walked into the bathroom and there was a crack pipe in the bathroom sitting there in the bathroom. And I just said, okay, well, thank you so much. And I didn't want to tell him we weren't going to service him, but I just like, have a good day. And I walked out. And right before I walked out, I turned and I said, what does your day look like today? And he said, well, I got shot in the back as a security guard, so I'm paralyzed from the waist down. Somebody stole my wheelchair last week, so I'm sitting here either waiting for somebody to come and bring me food or somebody to bring me drugs. And that's what my day is. And I was just like, again, I don't really know much about anything. And I think I would do the exact same thing if I was in his position. What an awful thing for me to walk away from. We furnished his home. We got him a computer. He ended up getting an online job, stuffing envelopes. And anyway, he got off government subsidies. He fully functioning part of society and really a lovely story. But really, I can't judge anybody's story. That is my lesson. If you walk into every situation just with empathy and just knowing that you don't know enough to be stand in judgment, I love that about hiring people. I love that about working with people. I love that about my clients. I just try and walk into every situation with fresh eyes, knowing that I don't know enough to place judgment.
Fantastic advice. And I think everybody really should do more of that. You have turned it into something truly beautiful. Thank you for telling us about it and sharing your story.
You're so lovely.
And thank you for listening.